Human sexuality is often misunderstood. We're familiar from Machshava, not only from the secular world, but from Machshava, the vast distinction we have in Jewish philosophy between the Jews and the Christians. But in the world today, it's known. The Christians view sexuality as something which is base, something which is a b'dieved. They view it philosophically as part of the result of original sin. Man is on a lower level, and therefore part of that is the sexual activity between a man and a woman, which is why, in the most pristine sense, when we deal with the dalachim, people in the priesthood are not permitted to be sexually active. That hashtrafa is totally wrong. That's not Judaism's hashtrafa. It's a hashtrafa which is patently ridiculous, not only as far as sexuality is concerned, but as far as gashmius in general. The approach of Christianity to gashmius is incorrect. And we know, since the hippies movement in the 60s, 70s, 80s, promiscuity is rampant in the street. The concept of sexuality being something which is very open, very free, nothing to be ashamed about, quite the contrary. It's something to be proud of, something to be not embarrassed about. Free love, it's something which is emblazoned on the buses, emblazoned on shows, both on the networks and on cable television, because we're very free about it. That's not an approach which is correct either. Both the freedom of the 60s world, which is still in existence today, or the prohibition of the Christian world, religious Christians, is not correct. As we know, Yiddishkeit views gashmius as something which is important, but specifically sexuality is something which is not only necessary for a healthy home, but very important. As a mashal, this is one mashal of many, the Shulchan Aruch says, the din mefurish of Shulchan Aruch, that it's proper for husband and wife to be together on Friday night. Now, the unique nature of Friday night is probably more Kabbalistic in nature, thank you, and it's more Kabbalistic, but the concept that Shulchan Aruch says there's an inyan, al pi halacha, for husband and wife to be together on Friday night, shows that whether it's Friday night, Thursday night, or any other time of the week, it's not something which is b'dieved, that's something the way the Shulchan Aruch wants it. Shulchan Aruch is halacha k'sefer, and Shulchan Aruch is telling us how important it is for husband and wife to be together. And that encompasses the hashtofa we have in general to sexuality. It's a very important part of life, important part of marriage, and very necessary. Often, if a couple has shown bias problems, it can be traced to some problem in the sexual relationship. Whether they admit it first or not, it's such an important part of the way a normal marriage functions that if it's not working normally, it can cause shalom bayis problems. We'll talk about that more, Bez Hashem, towards the end of our discussions. But it's an important thing to realize that halacha views it as super l'chatzchila, not as b'dieved. The street nowadays often, instead of viewing it as permissive, views it as dirty sometimes. We view it chas v'shalom. It's tahar. It's something which is very important, and the lashon we use often, although it's not found in the achronim, in the classical poskim, what's the normal name we usually use for hilchos nida? How do we call it? Taras ha-mishpacha. It's something which can create a mishpacha, the tara, with purity, because it's something so important to the normal function of the way a husband and wife interact, api halacha. Not the only way, but one of the major ways to bring kedusha, to show how important sexuality is in life, is to include it within the umbrella of halacha. We know that the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah, this Mishnah Berurah here, well used Mishnah Berurah, Baruch Hashem. This Mishnah Berurah has a lot of halachos, day-to-day function, from Siman Aleph all the way to the end, Aruch Chaim, deals with every aspect of a person's life. And in other parts of Shulchan Aruch, we talk about halachos of marriage, halachos of divorce, halachos of a person dying, Rechman Otzlan. Halacha covers everything in a Jewish person's life. And sexuality is no exception. So even though Hilchos Nida don't deal directly with sexuality, the very fact that they deal with the times of the month that a husband and wife may or may not be together is a way of making sexuality tahar. It includes it within the umbrella of halacha. As we'll going to discuss later, Bez Hashem, we don't view sexuality as something which is intrinsically important in of itself, unless it's in the context of a relationship. And the beauty of sexuality in Yahadus is that it's something that brings husband and wife together, closer, v'hayu l'vasar echad, as the pasuk says, they're going to be one person, and that is in the context of a relationship. If it's not in the context of a relationship, chas v'shalom, then it's terrible. But if it's in the context of a relationship, it's a very important mitzvah. But often, when we live in the Western world, especially the world now, which views sex as something which is dirty, and sometimes fun because of the dirty nature, it's important to look back at the mashal of the Nesivos. Ray Willard often quotes the mashal of the Nesivos HaMishpat, who wrote a sefer, a halachic sefer, on Choshev Mishpat, which is halachos of monetary law, as well as other svarim. The Nesivas and Mishpat wrote a sefer called Sror Hamar, which is a parish to Shir HaShirim. And in his parish to Shir HaShirim, he gives the mashal. He says, how can Shir HaShirim, which is a mashal of the connection between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be written in a way which, according to the translation, seems to be so base, so inappropriate? He says, the Nesivas, I'll give you a mashal. There was once a king who ran a country. As he was running the country, it became a little stressful. Stress is a part of every American's life, and certainly if you're a king, even more so. So he was very stressed, and every month he took a little bit of a reprieve. Well, every year he took a month reprieve and went to a beautiful island, a beautiful castle, where he could rest, relax, and prepare himself for the next year. Eventually, the country grew, he was very matzliach, and it became very hard for him to go to the castle on the island to visit. So instead, he hired the best artist in his kingdom to draw a gorgeous mural of the castle. And he hung that mural in one of the rooms of his winter castle. So this way, when he was stressed, although he couldn't make it to the castle in the summer, he would go into the room where it was quiet, and there's days at the castle. And just looking at it would remind him of the beautiful days of the summer that he used to have to be able to relax. I think the behavioral scientists would say that's called a conditioned response. But either way, we know it works. He was able to relax just by seeing the mural. One day, a vandal broke into the castle. And the vandal defaced the whole mural. What would the king do? Asked someone to write another mural, to draw another mural. The fact that some schmo made the picture defaced in no way made the castle itself defaced. That was what some vandal had a chutzpah to do to the king's picture. But of course it doesn't really affect the beautiful castle in an island far away. And so says the Nesivos, that's how we view sexuality. Sexuality is something which is important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it normal, in fact necessary, in fact important, for husband and wife to be together. There's no doubt about that. The fact that the secular world defaces it, they're defacing the picture. They're not defacing the actual chefza, they're not defacing sexuality itself, which is why it's a suitable mashal for Shir HaShirim, even though the world views it so differently. And the same thing is true in our world. When we talk about getting married, the connection between a husband and wife, it's important to realize that despite that the world, or the Christian world, the Western world, the 60s world, has different approaches to sexuality, those are not our approaches, and in no way can their approach deface our approach. They might destroy the picture, but they don't destroy our real perception. Hilchos Nida govern a woman's menstrual period. As we're going to discuss B'ez Hashem in a few minutes, it's normal for a woman once a month to give off blood. Her uterus, the endometrial lining of her uterus sloughs off, and once a month she has blood. In fact, the word for nida in English is menstruation. Menstruation comes from the Latin word mens, M-E-N-S-E-S, menses. It means month. Once a month, a woman sees blood from her uterus. And the halachas of nida govern that time of the month, because according to the halach, according to the Torah, if a husband is with his wife during the time that she has that blood, that she's a nida, there's an iser kares. It's like eating on Yom Kippur. And the halachas of nida discuss that time of the month, how one removes that status of nida, and the conduct husband and wife have during the time of the month that she is a nida, during the time of the month that she is not a nida. What's the reason for this nida? That question really is a question that one can ask without any mitzvah. Why do we take the wool of an esrog? Why do we sit in the sukkah? Why do we have Shabbos? What's the basic answer to all those questions? The simplest answer is, Hashem said so. That's why. Hashem said we do it. And that is really the essence of Hilchos Nida as well. Why do we say that it's prohibited for a husband to be with his wife when she's a Nida? Some might say because then she can't become pregnant, so it's not right. We don't need that. Because the Torah said so. That's it. That's the simplest reason. Nevertheless, there are many reasons given to help us understand the concept of Hilchus Nida. For example, the Gemara in Maseches Nida says that a benefit to keeping Hilchus Nida is that it's possible for a marriage in which there's constant permission sexually to get stale. It's possible for husband and wife to sometimes feel that there's no excitement anymore. And by having Hilchus Nida, says the Gemara, there's a constant honeymoon. Because as we're going to see, approximately every 2 weeks, a woman's going to be prohibited or permitted, based upon the fluctuation of the blood and the ensuing days that we'll talk about in the future, Bezat Hashem. That means every month, there's a constant honeymoon. For 2 weeks, she's permissible, 2 weeks not. And then, when she becomes permissible again, there's invigoration. And that, the Gemara says, is that the reason the Torah said it? Obviously not. But that's one benefit one gets from Hilchus Nida, the fact that there's a constant honeymoon, a constant freshness, a constant newness to one's marriage. Furthermore, there's a danger one can fall into when it's always permitted for the husband and wife to be together sexually. A focusing on the body, focusing on intimacy, rather than focusing on the communication. And we know one of the most important aspects of marriage is to communicate, to talk. And a benefit of having times of the month where there's no physical contact permissible is that one focuses not on actions, but on words. Is that the reason for the halacha? Obviously not. But a side benefit, it definitely is. Furthermore, the Ravid, one of the Rishonim, wrote a sefer called Balei HaNefesh and Hilchus Nida. In the introduction, he writes that whenever we have a great gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we try to show that we acknowledge that gift comes from Hashem, and we give a little bit to Hashem. For example, I just said the zechus of being in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, we know that if you have crops, you give. What do you give? Truma, Meiser, this year we have Shvius, Shemitah. We give things to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Ravid, the same thing is true with marriage. Marriage is one of the major gifts God gave to mankind. And because of the great nature of the gift, in order to show that we thank God for it, we have time that we say, we're not going to be permitted to each other. We give a little bit of a sacrifice. And that self-sacrifice is a way of showing our appreciation to Hashem. Again, is that the reason for it? No, we don't need the Ravid. The Torah said so. That's one aspect the Ravid adds to the concept of the Halachas of Nida. The most important halacha, hands down, the most important halacha in Halachas Nida is Aselecha Rav. Make a Rav for yourself. It's essential to find the person that you feel comfortable with, not only you, but your Kala and future wife, Bezat Hashem, feels comfortable with discussing Shilas. Because, as my wife often tells Kalas, when you have Hilchus Nida, the wife is the most machmir, the husband is the more meitel, and the Rav is the most meitel. Why? Because, obviously, a little knowledge is a bad thing. You know a little bit about something, and then you think, oh no, I'm not sure, is this. A Rav who's competent and knows halachos knows, no, that's not a problem, that's okay, be meitel here, be machmir here. So it's essential, and we're going to repeat it throughout our shiurim. Asay l'chal rav. Make a rebbe for yourself. Because it's important to have the comfort. To ask the shayla, the rav doesn't think that any shayla is too small, no shayla is too big. You feel comfortable discussing things with the rav. Because in Hilchus Nida, as well as all halacha, but specifically Hilchus Nida, asay l'chal rav. Often it's a little hard for people because Hilchus Nida is more intimate halachic part of life. It deals with a private part of a woman's body, and privacy between husband and wife in general, which is why it's important to reiterate the fact, Aseh l'cha rav, find the person you feel comfortable with. The person that's competent, that you feel comfortable with, discuss shilas with him. Aseh l'cha rav. Biology of Hilchus Nida is... No, Johnny Reese. Okay, give me 1 second. Go ahead. Sorry? Let's discuss a little bit of the biology of Hilchus Nida. There's three basic parts we're going to discuss in Halacha. A woman's body has the uterus. Uterus is where the Nes Nigla, the open miracle of creation,
the baby takes place. When a woman once a month ovulates, she has two tubes, the fallopian tubes, the ovaries are up here. The ovaries once a month give off an egg, which can be fertilized. If the egg is fertilized, then the egg grows, latches onto the side of the uterus, and eventually is going to become a child, a baby. Nes Nigla, one of the Nisim, the open miracles that Hashem gave us in this world. In order for the baby to be viable and to latch onto the uterus properly, it's necessary for the uterus to have a lining. This lining is what we call the endometrium. And when the endometrium is rich in blood, in blood vessels, in tissue, and when the endometrium, when the egg is fertilized, then it can latch onto the endometrium, the lining of the uterus, and then continue growing. Eventually, it's going to have the umbilical cord, the placenta, as I'm sure you're aware of, and the child all growing in the uterus, the embryo. But what if that egg is not fertilized? If the egg isn't fertilized, then the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a woman's body, every month, the lining of the uterus, the extra endometrium, is going to slough off. There's always some endometrium left, but the thickening, that extra part that was there in order to give the uterus strength to hold the baby, is going to slough off. So you have blood, blood vessels, and tissue that slough off, come out of the uterus. On the way, they pass through the cervix. Cervix is the neck between the uterus and the vaginal canal, and they're going to leave the body. Dam nida, menstrual blood. That's once a month. That's why it's called the mens, as I mentioned before. And parenthetically, when a woman, this is usually a 28-day cycle, approximately. 28-day cycle, which means that when the woman usually is going to have this situation of blood sloughing off, is going to last halachically for around 14 days. When a woman comes back from a mikvah, which is the way she removes the nida status, 14 days later, or usually around that time, is when the egg is going to be released. So usually, women become pregnant, they're most prone to becoming pregnant the night she comes back from the mikvah, or the night after. And then it's that, so that egg comes off, that egg is not fertilized. She's with her husband and it's not fertilized, then 2 weeks later, the process starts again. So 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, usually is the summary of Hilchos Nida that we're going to discuss in a few minutes. But as far as Hilchos Nida is concerned, halakhically, the only blood that we ever talk about as far as Dam Nida is Dam Mina Mokar. Mokar is a Hebrew word, literally it means, Mokar means source, but it refers to the source of blood, the uterus. The only blood in Hilchos Nida is the blood of the uterus. Which means, if a woman would have blood from her cervix, would that be a problem as far as Hilchos Nida? Would that make her a Nida?
No.
No. There's blood from the vagina. Is that going to make her a Nida? No. The only blood we talk about is Dam Min HaMakor, blood from the cervix. Now, it's important to realize that sometimes when a woman sees blood, it's hard to know where the blood's coming from. Often we have to be machmir because we're not sure if it's cervical blood. But as we'll talk about in the future, if she knows she has a laceration or a cut or infection somewhere that's not the uterus, often we're going to be metal. Because in principle, the only blood we're concerned about is dam min hamakor, blood from the uterus. There's one other organ, the very opening of the vagina is the hymen, which is a thin tissue which is broken during the first sexual act. We'll talk about that in the future, Bezat Hashem. That will render a woman, since there is usually blood there, that's going to render a woman nida midrabanan. We'll talk about that, Bezat Hashem, when we're closer to the end. But the three major parts of a woman's body that we're concerned with are the uterus, the vagina, and the cervix. And again, as far as Hilchos Nida is concerned, the only real area of Dam Nida is Dam Min HaMakor, Dam from the uterus. And the halacha is, says the Gemara, when a woman sees Tipas Dam, a drop of blood, kechardel, even as small as a mustard seed, for one drop of blood, she has to wait zayin nitim, 7 clean days. Which is why I mentioned, even if she has whatever blood she has, automatically she's not
going to be permitted to her husband until she counts 7 days of no blood and then goes to the mikvah. Which is why, usually, the time that a woman is prohibited is 2 weeks. Because, in point of fact, the average period, the average menstrual period that a woman has lasts around 5 or 6 days. Since it lasts around 5 or 6 days, then if you have the period lasting 5 or 6 days, and the zaynikim, the 7 days that are clean, that she has to count before she goes to the mikvah to remove the nida status, you have around 2 weeks. So in theory, a woman can go to the mikvah almost a week after she has blood, if she has blood for some reason, which is only a tiny bit, and then stops. But most periods are for 5 days. So therefore, we have the approximately two-week status of nida, which is removed by going to the mikvah, and then she's permitted for the next 2 weeks until she becomes a nida again. But even though we know that in halacha there is a status of a woman being a nida whenever she sees blood, there's a major difference between if a woman sees blood in one fashion, sees blood in another fashion. According to the Torah, the only time a woman is considered a nida, midaraisa, mina Torah, is if she sees blood with a hargasha. Hargasha means that she feels the sensations. She feels the blood leave her uterus and go out. Hargasha literally means the sensation is necessary to be a nida. If there's no hargasha, there's no sensation, even if she has blood, even if she knows the blood is in the uterus, let's say she's in the doctor's office, and she's going through an ultrasound, she sees the blood leave her uterus, and now it's on her clothing, it's on the examination tray, she's not going to be a nida unless she has the requisite hargasha. She feels it leave her uterus. Nevertheless, halacha is, according to most poskim, nowadays we don't know exactly what happened, but women don't have that hargasha. They don't feel it. They don't have that sensation. If you ask any woman, when she has a period, feels the blood leave her uterus, she'll feel like she's crazy. She might feel some moisture, but the moisture she feels is much past the uterus. That's going to be when it's already outside her body. Maybe it'll be in the vaginal canal. Women don't feel the blood leave the uterus. So nowadays, there's no hargasha. Nevertheless, we say that a woman is considered a nida, midaraisa, if she has a normal period, because we presume that even though she didn't feel the hargasha was there. We know that women have hargashos. We know the body, whatever the Gemara is talking about, when it says that women feel it, is a biological fact. It's just that women nowadays, for some reason, are not sensitive to it. So whenever a woman has a normal period, normal in volume, normal with whatever she normally has, cramps, headache, if it has the entire gestalt, the entire feeling is that of a period, she's going to be considered nida midaraisa, even though she didn't really feel the sensation. Because we don't know what happens. It's a big mystery. But l'maisa, no woman has a sensation, then obviously we're not going to say that a woman is never going to be a nida, ever, in a Torah. We presume that they just don't know what to feel, but l'maisa, they have the sensation. So therefore, whatever it's a normal period, the normal amount, the normal feeling that she normally has from month to month, that's going to have the equal status of nida midaraisa. We would call that her cycle. That's her period. But often a woman can have blood which comes out, which is mid-cycle. It's not normal. She's not expecting it. What does that mean? It means she usually has a certain amount of blood. This time it's much less. She usually has a headache. Now she barely feels anything. That's considered mid-cycle bleeding. But it's interesting and important not to be tripped up by the two words, cycle and mid-cycle. Usually you think of cycle, the time of the month that she's expecting it, and mid-cycle, when it's some time that she's not expecting it. But that's not true. Cycle and mid-cycle is not a function of time. If she's expecting a period today, but all she has is a tiny period, that's still mid-cycle. Even though she thinks it's supposed to come, it's irrelevant. If it doesn't feel like a normal period, that's still mid-cycle bleeding. So again, cyclical bleeding
her normal cycle, her normal period, where it has the amount, the normal amount, and the feeling of a period is going to be Tamea min HaTorah. That's Nida Midaraisa. But what I'm describing is mid-cycle bleeding, which again, is not a function of time. Mid-cycle means it doesn't feel like a period would normally feels. It's too much, too little blood. It's barely noticeable. She has no cramps, no headache, no stomach pains, whatever she would normally have. That's mid-cycle bleeding. That's still Tamea, but it's only Midrabanan. You might say, big deal. Whether it's Deraisa or Drabanan, what's the difference? And then here we have three major kulas that Chazal gave us Midrabanan. If a woman's a Nida min HaTorah, that's not Chazal. That's a Nida. No matter what, she's a Nida. But once Chazal made a Nida Midrabanan, they said in certain situations where it's mid-cycle, we're the ones that make her into a Nida, with that chumrah of her being a Nida mid-cycle, we have three leniencies that Chazal said we're not going to be dozer on. Those are three very, very important leniencies. But before we go to those leniencies, anyone have any questions on anything we've discussed so far?
What's the top tubes for the land?
Those are the fallopian tubes. Those are not relevant as far as halacha, as far as biology.
Trying to remember biology.
The ovaries are here. And the egg goes to the fallopian tubes. And then goes to the uterus. And if it's fertilized, then it's going to grow into an embryo. Usually, in a woman whose body is functioning properly, once each ovary switches off month to month, it's a miracle. It's a time clock. It's amazing. And that's what some of the darshanim point out. The reason women don't necessarily need to do mitzvahs, so many mitzvahs, is because their body is much more related to time. Men don't have such a thing. Men's body is the same all the time. Women, closely related to time. There's a lot of, that's what sometimes people point out, Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov for women wouldn't have a unique relationship to time. Danny, question?
Is it obvious to the woman whether it's cycle or mid-cycle?
No, so it's an important, it's a very hard thing to figure out. I'm making it very simple. If she has the normal cramps, she has the normal period, the normal amount. Two rules of thumb, which again, you should not pass from yourself, just to know what a rule is going to sometimes take into account. Rabbi Willard often tells people that if a woman has bleeding, whether it's her period, again, time is irrelevant, whether she thinks it's her period or it's mid-cycle. If she has 50% of the heaviest day of her period, then that's already considered her period. Rabbi Neuwirth often says if it's the equivalent of the first day of the period, because often the blood gets, starts off as a trickle, then it's heavier and heavier. Both are two generalizations. How do we know, in terms of quantity, which is considered a period and which is considered spadim? In halacha, we call spadim mid-cycle. Finally, we call it kesem. Chaf, taf, mem. Kesem means a stain. Staining is only osim midrabanan. That's not considered real nida status. Often it's not obvious, and it's hard to know. Each rav has to use a shir hadas to try to figure out, based on the context, is that considered a normal period or not. Just as an aside, there's a recent question which is raised. A birth control medium, which is very popular now, is called Mirena. Mirena is not a pill, but it's an IUD, an intrauterine device. It's interesting. One of the ways that science discovered to stop a woman from being pregnant is using an IUD, something inserted into the uterus, made of copper. And for some reason, copper has an adverse effect on the uterus and makes the uterus not able to become, makes an egg not able to be fertilized. Now science is even more advanced. Usually an IUD, an intrauterine device, is made of copper, but it has some sort of medicine in it as well. And a popular medicine is called Mirena. What Mirena does is stops a woman's period almost totally. So a woman can go months without having a period. If she goes months without having a period, is she ever a Nida? No, nothing to talk about. But often what Mirena does is give a little bit of blood. Makes her have, let's say, 2 cc's, a tiny bit of blood every month. So how do we view that? Is that a normal period? Obviously not. But maybe for her, when she's on Mirena, that's her normal period. Is she going to be a Nida Midaraisa? Or maybe not. Maybe only Midrabanan, and we'll talk about the coolest that exists Midrabanan. It's a big shaila, which Rabbi Willard has an article about this. It's a major shaila in halacha. How do we view that? It just shows how sometimes you can't even use the volume alone. You have to look at the whole context to try to figure out if it's considered cycle or mid-cycle. Is it Nida Midaraisa or Kesem? So it's important to talk to a Rav, but often, the basic idea it's important to have in your head
Nida midiraisa is normal period. Nida midirabanan is going to be mid-cycle staining. Well, there's three opinions on what Hardasha was exactly. One of the opinions is that it was feeling the blood leave the uterus, which is a hard thing for us to understand. It's sort of like we can feel our stomachs rattle, but we don't feel, let's say, when the stomach passes the food past the stomach. It doesn't. It's hard to understand what it was. So some say that women were much more sensitive those days. They didn't really have that much to do. Others say something might have biologically changed. It's hard to know what happened. I mean, it's a mystery. But Lamaisa, we presume that we can't say the Hardasha just disappeared. We have to presume that if she has a normal period, the Hardasha is there, she just didn't feel it.
We don't consider the typical symptoms that women experience today to be Hardasha.
Correct. There's a small minority of postmen that say that, let's say, cramps itself is the Hardasha. We presume that's not true. Hardasha has to be the blood coming out, not anything separate. Meaning, we do say, if a woman knows she always has cramps whenever she has a period, then if she's feeling cramps, she has to presume her period is going to come. That has the halachas of Vesas, we'll talk about it in the future. But as far as that being the Hardasha, it's hard to say that that's the Hardasha. There's a minority opinion that says that's the Hardasha, but usually Hardasha means the blood coming out, not something that happens to her as a side point when the blood's coming out. The three kulas, the three leniences that we have for Nida Midrabanan are very important to keep in mind. They happen all the time. Number one, the only time mid-cycle bleeding, a kesem, is a problem, is if the stain that comes out is larger than the shear of a penny. In the days of the Shulchan Aruch, in the postum, we talk about this as a gris. Gris means a grain of barley. But that's irrelevant. We don't usually use grains of barley nowadays. The postum usually presumes that's the size of a penny. So if it's a woman's period, then in theory, if she has small periods and her blood's the size of a penny, she's still tomato with the rice. But if it's mid-cycle, it's a kesem, it's a surprise, not normal, and all she sees is the size of a penny or less, she's in the clear, that's not considered nida. Even though we mentioned a few erotipas dam kachardo, even if she sees the size of a barley seed, she's tomato, that's only referring to a normal period. Or other situations where she doesn't have these leniencies. But if she has a tiny bit of blood where it's mid-cycle, no cramps, it's far beyond the normal amount of blood to see, she's only going to be tamea midrabanan. And then if she's going to have less than a penny size, she's taro damri, totally taro. So if a woman in the middle of her zayin nitiyim, let's say the woman in the middle of her day is that she's going to want to be clean, finds a little bit of blood in her underwear, less than the size of a penny, does she ruin her 7 clean days? No, that day is still considered clean. Because, halakhically, as long as it's not her period, blood less than the size of a penny is irrelevant. It sounds very simple to talk about blood less than the size of a penny, but as you might imagine, blood doesn't usually come out on something in a neat circle. Usually it's Murphy's Law, it's going to be harder to figure out. The closer you are to a penny, the more awkward the shape of the blood is. And most Rabbanim are experienced in trying to figure out how does this blotch on a garment look if you're trying to make it through a circle, trying to make it look like a penny. Is it going to be less than a penny, more than a penny? And that's a very important kula. Again, for a period, can we have the leniency of a penny? No. But anything which is not a period per se can have this leniency less than sheer dris, less than the size of a penny. Another leniency, which is very, very important, is that the only time Chazal said that mid-cycle bleeding is a problem is if this blood is found on something white. But if the blood is found on something which is not white, that is totally permissible. That means, let's say a woman is in the middle of her days of Tara. She's going to be with her husband, nothing wrong. And all of a sudden, she finds blood the size of a quarter. We don't have the leniency of a penny. Blood the size of a quarter on her underwear. Is she Tumea or Tahora? The answer depends on what the color of the underwear is. If the underwear is black, red, purple,
not white, that blood is going to be irrelevant again. Even though it's more than a penny, it's a separate kula. If it's more than the sum of a penny, it can still be Torah if the blood itself is on some of which is what we call begadim tzivonim, colored garments. Not only that, the Gemara and the Rama after the Gemara tell us that it's advisable for a woman to wear begadim tzivonim. When a woman is in the days of Tara, she should always wear tzivonim. Because there's no reason for a woman to enter herself into a situation of problems. Which is why women should have a lot of colored garments. In most contemporary wardrobes, women should, in theory, wear white suits. Usually blood's not going to get on anything which is external. That's because women usually have undergarments. So we're mostly concerned with undergarments. Undergarments, when a woman is tahora, when she's permissible, should always be colored. Because why should a woman ever get herself into a problem of staining and make herself tamea? Let her have the undergarments, which are colored, and keep her tahora. Not only that, most things a husband and wife use should be colored. Which means bed sheets should be colored. This way, if a woman somehow stains during the middle of the month, is she going to be tamea? No. It's colored. Pajamas. Woman's going to be tahara. And it's important to realize, just pragmatically speaking, often you can have pajamas or underwear which seem to be colored, but the crotch is white. That's not going to do any good. Make sure everything is going to be considered colored. And then, woman saves herself from having the problem of spotting. What if a woman has a ton of blood on Badam Savonim? Is she going to be Tamea? Of course, that's already going to be a period again. She has so much blood, then it's hard to ignore it. But even if there's a significant amount, two quarters, a lot more than a normal penny, she's still going to be Tahara. That's Savonim, that's Mutu Adari.
What do you do for all the wine? What's two quarters and
what's... It's a good question. That's part of the ambiguity I mentioned there. Will often is this 50% rule where a Neubiter has the rule of the first day of the period. But either of those, don't try those at home. Those are not rules that you can pass by yourself. It's just to make you more sensitive to the concept that it's hot, it's murky, and you have to ask a Rav, the person you ask shaylos to try to figure out, is that the period or not? In fact, not only a Rav, if you ask a woman, well, how much would you say percentage-wise is this to make your normal period? She's not usually going to say, oh, it's around 50%. Women don't usually know. They don't keep such track of their period to know how many cc's they have. So very often it deals with the eyeball, and you have to try to deal based on context. But in theory, if it's a quarter's worth, that's definitely not going to be a problem. That's not a normal period. Even two quarters, depending on the woman and the situation, there's room to make in those situations as well. Again, not for yourself, it's important to ask your own, but it's important to have the background to know what we're dealing with. How do we define colors? What does colored mean? White clearly is not colored. White's going to be a problem. And anything that's whitish, very well, it often points out as a problem, which means you might say this is real white, but this is off-white, that's different color white, the cloth is different color white, all those are white. The shades, not the dirty part, but the other parts of the shades, are different color white. All those are considered white, even though some might be cream, some might be ivory, anything whitish is considered white. Once you move away from that, then we're makel. And it's important not to start making khatirs and saying maybe this is, you can be makel, maybe not. Don't bother. The darker the better, because why bother getting involved with the shiloh? What about pastels? Pastels, there's a minority opinion that says pastels are considered a problem, since you can really see the red on them very clearly, that's a problem, but we don't presume that. We presume pastels are also permissible. Once it's not white, it's not white. So let's say a pink shirt, or a blue shirt, gray shirt, all those things which in theory are pretty light, those are still not a problem, that's considered mutu adam. But white, whether it's cream, dark white, off-white, white is white. White's going to still be considered in the white family. Anything not white is always mutter.
A lot of pajamas have sort of like your shirt,
yeah,
white dots.
Yes, and that's a big problem. If in theory, if let's say this box is, will enlarge, let's say if there's a plaid. So let's say you have, let's say this is colored, and these are white, let's say. Then in theory, okay, this would not be a good plaid, but let's say if you have blood that goes like this, that's mistarif. The fact that there's blood here is irrelevant, but blood here plus here is going to be a problem. So if these two together are going to join and be the shear of a dris, more than the size of a penny, you're in trouble. We do say that, let's say, if a woman has on a bedded, if there's blood here which is less than the size of a penny, blood here less than the size of a penny, that's not a problem. But if here they're joining, it's just that there's colored garments in the way. If on the white, which is really one stain, there's enough of a shear dris, that's going to be a problem. Which is why it's highly unadvisable to have something which is checkered or plaid. Stay away from whites. Because once you have a little white, you can slow down into a problem with the other white joining as well. And it's important to change your mindset, to realize anything that's white should be a problem. Mattress pads, pajamas, anything that you deal with, towels sometimes people have. The less white you have, the better. Why bother getting involved in the situation? In fact, with mattress pads, we have to really invoke the rule of one of the major rules of Nida. What you don't know can't hurt you. Ignorance is bliss. If a woman finds, for some reason, there's blood on her sheets, it's not advisable for her to pick up the sheets, put them in the laundry, and expose a mattress pad. Because Murphy's Law, if anything can go wrong, it will. Most mattress pads are what color?
White.
You see blood on the mattress pad. Now, if you don't know there's one in the mattress pad, you don't need to look for it. This is all nida midrabanan, because we're not mechayiv to look for blood. So if a woman wants to clean her mattress pad and her sheets, do it with her eyes closed. Take off the sheet, take off the mattress pad. If she wants to do that, she's fine. But it's better to be ignorant. Don't look for blood. What you don't know can't hurt you. What you do know, though, can't penalize you. There's no chiyuv to do so. But beware of mattress pads. Most couples, sometime in their marriage, will have a mattress pad faux pas. Be aware of it, and try to make yourself not one of those most couples. There's no reason for it.
And if the husband finds it,
same thing, depends. Depends why. We presume that in a healthy man, there's no reason to have blood. So therefore, if he finds blood, we'll talk about in any situation, if he finds blood in anything that's dealing with him, if it could be from her, it still doesn't be a problem. If they have two separate beds, and he finds it in his bed, there's no reason to come from her, then we'll say it's mutter, probably. But if there's any chance it came from her, since there's no reason to say it came from him, it's still going to make this a nida shayla.
So, let's say you found blood on a colored sheet, and say you want to change the sheet.
Right, husband knows it's not right. Exactly. It doesn't. It's not going to happen. Husband, as long as the husband knows. Correct.
What if a kid?
Yes, that's what are the maid. Let's say those are it. So then there's some. That's a shaila. It might be room to mekel. Might be room to mekel. It might be related. Ray Will has in his article what happens if a woman goes to the doctor, and the doctor knows. Let's say she's under general anesthetic, and she has blood, and the doctor takes blood out of her. Does he have a chiyuv to tell her or not? It's an interesting shaila. We usually presume yes. Ray Will thinks maybe there's no chiyuv, so it might be related to that as well. But the maid who's a non-Jew, yeah, that would be fine. Pashtus. Bipashtas, that's okay, right. But it's important just to be aware of it. And it's just, no, okay, if it happens, it happens, but there's no chiyuv for you to go crazy. Use the kula of Sivonim. It's Ramah. The Ramah says, women should wear Sivonim. So it turns out that there's only one time of the whole month that women should be wearing white garments. We'll see, the minhag of Ashkenaz is that when a woman has the Zayinatim period, the 7 days that she's counting from after she finishes seeing the blood, so she goes to mikvah, then she's supposed to wear white garments. But any time beyond that, whether she's tahora or even during the nida period, there's no reason to wear white garments. A woman should have a lot more tahora garments in her wardrobe, because aside from those 7 days, there's no reason to have any white whatsoever. And it's true as far as everything. Again, bed sheets, anything that the wife can come in contact with, why bother getting involved in a shiloh where there's nothing to lose? In fact, we presume we're going to talk about this a little bit later, Bez Hashem. There's a problem. Let's say a woman, for some reason, has some additional moisture. There's two ways for a woman to put on something in order to stop them from having vaginal moisture. One is a pad which a woman puts on her underwear, or a tampon which a woman inserts into the vaginal canal in order to absorb moisture. If either of those are found with blood, there's serious shadows that can result.
So be careful also. If a woman's putting a tampon in for some reason, let's say she's with her husband, so she has additional moisture in the vaginal canal she wants to absorb, make sure don't look at the tampon. Because if she finds even a little bit of blood, even though she thinks, oh, it's really from a scratch, irritation, we can't really prove it, and she's going to have to be tamea. Why bother? Don't look. What you don't know can't hurt you.
They don't make colored ones?
They don't make colored tampons. There is movement to sorry, it's a shayla. We'll talk about it. Might not be that, as you'll see in a minute, in a little while, it might be that it wouldn't help for a colored tampon, but for pads it would help. There's no colored pads that I know of either. The next leniency, the third leniency that we have for mid-cycle bleeding, for anything which is not a full-blown period, is that Chazal only knows there the concept of nida midirabanan on something which is mekabel tumah. Something which can become tummy. We know that tumah applies throughout halacha. For example, a mace. Mace is the pinnacle of tumah. And if something touches a mace, that thing becomes tummy as well. But there are certain things that are never mekabel tumah, such as a building, for example. If a mace touches a building, is a building tummy? No. If a person's in the building with the mace, then a person's tummy because there's ohel, there's a common canopy. But as far as the actual mace touching a building, the building can't be mekabel tumah. Let's say a piece of cloth, a small piece of cloth, less than 3 fingers by 3 fingers, cannot be mekabel tumah. It's too little of a tli, it's not mekabel tumah. Anything which can't be mekabel tumah can't be mekabel tsamim as well. Can't take blood and make it a problem. Therefore, we say, let's say a woman, for some reason, would be, in theory, let's say she has her period and it splashes on the wall. So we mentioned this wall is white. And it's enough to say that it's not a full-blown period, because then we don't have these leniencies, but it's enough to say that it's a quarter size. She finds it on this wall. Is she an either or not? No. Since buildings are not mekabel tumah, she's going to be tahara. Anything which is not mekabel tumah does not get summoned as well. Can't make her have a problem mid-cycle. The same thing is true often in the bathroom. The woman finds blood on the toilet seat. Is she going to be tamea? What do you think Rebbe will say? No. Toilet seat is connected to the entire building, which is also not mekabel tumah. And here we have a tremendous chiddush from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Since Rav Moshe Feinstein, not only is something not mekabel tumah, such as a building, because it's connected to the ground, or something connected to the building, disposable items are not mekabel tumah as well. Which is why, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, if a woman finds a small amount of blood on toilet paper, she's tahara. That blood is mid-cycle blood, and since toilet paper is disposable, it's not mekabel tumah. Furthermore, if a woman finds a small amount of blood on a pad, she's going to be tahara. Because pads are disposable, and even though it's made of paper, even though in theory to be mekabel tumah qua itself, since it's disposable, it's not mekabel tumah, and therefore she's going to be tahara. Tremendous tshuva from Moshe Feinstein, based on this idea that anything which is not mekabel tumah is going to be tahara.
We hold that?
Yes.
So then we don't need to discuss the
So now, first of all, we try, even since it's a tshuva, as far as pads are concerned, we try not to involve. Meaning if a person comes to one of our rebbeim and says, ask a shayla on toilet paper or a pad, we're usually mapil. But since Rav Moshe Feinstein is not the unanimous opinion, there's no reason to involve this if you don't have it. So throw out the pad without looking. If a woman makes a mistake and sees a pad with blood, then usually we're makeup. There's no reason to involve this. And, as we're going to see next week, Rez Hashem, there are a few situations that a woman can have which, despite the fact that there are no other indication that it's a period, we're going to be concerned that it's a period as well. Just to show this very briefly, something involved with the vaginal canal and having the sensation puts us in a quandary. Because we mentioned that what separates the men from the boys, what separates nida midiraisa from nida midirabanan, one word, hargasha, the sensation.
We don't know what happens to Hadrasha nowadays. The Gemara says that there are three things which might mimic Hadrasha. They're so similar to Hadrasha that even if a woman has a small amount of blood that we would have otherwise thought is considered a tesem, only staining, mitzvah of bleeding, she still ought to be considered tamea midiraisa. Those are three things which deal with the internal organs. Number one, if she urinates. If a woman urinates and right after urination sees blood, even if it's a small amount, we're concerned that she might have had the sensation because she might really have had the sensation of nida. But since she thought it was urination, she said, it's nothing. But in reality, was it urination? The sensation she felt was a sensation of nida. She's tamei midiraisa. Similarly, the halacha is if she does an internal examination, she puts something into her vagina, such as the tampon, and comes out with even a tiny bit of blood, we're concerned that she was really a nida midiraisa, that was considered her period. It's a little bit of blood? Yeah, but for all she knows, she might have had a hardasha, the sensation, and she just didn't think it was the sensation, she thought it was the sensation of the tampon. And then she's going to tamea midiraisa. And thirdly, sexual intercourse. If a woman's with her husband, and right after being with her husband, she has blood, whether it's found on her or him, we're concerned that she thought she was feeling the sexual intercourse. That was the hardasha. But in reality, that was the uterine feeling of the blood leaving, and she just missed it. And if she's in the rice. Those three things, and then we're going to discuss them more at length next week, those three things are things that it's important to be aware of. Even with the leniency of pesamim, which usually means that it's mitzvah of bleeding, we have the leniency, the fact that it's a penny size, or that it's white garments, or that it's disposable. If you're involved in one of those things, it's a problem. For example, let's say a woman puts a tampon in her body. We thought that's considered a tiny bit of blood. She should be tahor for two reasons. Number one, it's a tiny bit of blood, it's less than the size of a penny. Number two, it's disposable. Will she be tahora? No. Because we're concerned that in reality there was a sensation there, period. Even though we don't have the sensation nowadays. The Rambam says we're always concerned that there might have been a sensation, and therefore she's a nida midiraisa, and we don't have the leniencies, because these leniencies only exist by nida midirabanan. Similarly, let's say a woman is with her husband, and then he cleans himself off and finds on the cloth that he used to clean himself off afterwards, he finds blood. Even if the cloth is something which is disposable, is she tamea? Yes. Because since it was right after sexual intercourse and there's blood there, the blood didn't come from him, it must come from her, and therefore we're concerned that she really is a nida midiraisa, not nida midirabanan. So it's important to realize, even though we have the leniencies of Pachas Nishadris, Vedan Sivonim, and Emet Kabbal Tumah, in some situations where you might have thought it's mitzvah of bleeding, it's going to be considered Tameya Bidereisa. And it's important to realize, I'm going to say it again next week, this happened very often. My wife sometimes teaches Talal, she'll tell them in situations, then the Talal will say when she's going in close to her wedding, say, you know, I did a Vedika, I checked internally, what women have to do sometimes in order to ascertain there's no blood, I checked with a Bedita cloth, the small piece of cotton cloth that she inserts into the vaginal canal to find there's no blood. And I saw there was a little bit of rug, but it was less than the sheer penny, less than the size of a penny, so I just threw it out. I didn't ask the shayla. And was that how correct or not? Vehemently incorrect. Wrong, 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 wrong. Why is she wrong? Once it's internal, even a tiny bit of blood might be a problem. So again, we mentioned that the only concern of blood is uterine blood. Midiraisa with a sensation, midirabanan even without a sensation. But since Chazal were machmir without a sensation, there's three leniencies. One of the leniencies, less than a dris, in a Kabbal Tumah, and midrasan savonin. Nevertheless, if it's internal, or it's with sexual intercourse, or it's with urination, we are back to the raisa, and these leniencies do not apply. Bezu Hashem will continue next week with this concept of internal examinations and the like, and go further to Elchus of Nida. We don't admire it now and must. If anyone has any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. I just realized this clock is a minute and a half slow. We have to hurry up. We'll probably start admiring already.